good evening out there tonight, and welcome to Matrix Radio Live. I'm your host this evening for the next hour. It is January 2nd, 2009. Hope you had a great new year. Just wanted to give a little information about our ministry here. Our website is matrixministries.com, www.matrixministries.com. Go to the website. There's a lot of good information about our ministry there. You can help support us in our fight against the global takeover of America. There is also a lot of valuable information on there that you can read about. There's also different ways you can contact us here at the ministry as well. So go to the website and check it out when you get a chance. We will be live for the next hour, broadcasting here from Mooresville, North Carolina in the United States. Also, we'd like to have you call in and speak with us this evening. If you go to the bbsradio.com website, you can look at our page and find all the call-in numbers. There's about 6 or 7 different numbers you can use there to call in, no matter where you're at in the world. So give us a call tonight. We'd like to hear from you. We got some interesting information to talk about tonight. I'm joined in the studio right now by Army Captain Brad Miller. And Brad is here just taking a little time off from his duty station and here for the holidays. So we've been blessed to have Brad in the studio with us here the last couple of weeks on our show. And Brad will be giving us some interesting commentary and input as to some of the different things we're going to be talking about tonight. So just wanted to turn it over to Brad for a minute, let him say hi to everybody out there. And just get his input on what he's been up to the last week, and also just so he can connect with the people out there. Brad, I'll turn it over to you for a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Martin, for having me on the show tonight. I appreciate this opportunity to be able to connect with the listeners out there and talk about some of the things that are happening in the world and also within our own nation. A lot of things that you have to read between the lines to really understand what's happening behind the curtain. I am from Mooresville, North Carolina originally. I've been serving in the Army for a couple of years now. Went to school at West Point, graduated from there a few years ago, and I have served overseas. So got a little bit of a perspective out there as to some of the things that are happening and also what we can do just as private citizens to help educate ourselves and others as to many of the things that are happening in our nation, in our states, and in our communities, and within our families.
Yeah, I think, you know, Brad, that's really the key is education. It just amazes me that in this country of America here that we live in, the amount of education that people have on an academic level, but people just don't seem to want to take the time or energy to educate themselves on a spiritual level, on a level of understanding their surroundings and what's happening to them in the world today, an economic level. There's just so many different areas of education that are open to us. And, you know, I think the majority of the citizenry out there just really negate to educate themselves in a lot of these areas. I am, you know, by no means highly educated academically. I don't hold a PhD or anything like that. But I still strive on a daily basis to educate myself, and I think that's really the key. I read a lot, and I try to educate myself about history, about our country, and just, you know, a wide range of different topics, economics, spirituality, as well as just the standard academia groups of knowledge. So I do my best to educate myself in a lot of different areas, and it's really helped me. It's helped open up my eyes to a lot of the tyranny that's going on in this country today, and it's helped me put a lot of the puzzle pieces together. I've been blessed to have a wonderful wife at my side for the past 12 years. Who is very well educated in the medical field, She went to medical school, has a degree in psychology as well as medicine, and she has really helped me as well to open my eyes on that side of things, you know. So you and I were talking briefly a little while ago about vaccines and you know, all these different things that the American Medical Association, the American Dental Association, a lot of these groups promote and really put out there to the American people as the gospel truth of, you know, what they need to do in order to keep themselves healthy, keep themselves going strong. And I think a lot of it doesn't hold water when you really look at it. But the thing that I find amazing is that, you know, it seems that although education is really important, that, you know, certain things like doctor degrees tend to have, I don't know, this myth about them, that if you have hold one of those types of degrees, that, you know, anything you say is the gospel truth.
Right.
And unfortunately, when it comes to the gospel truth, there's a lot of devils and demons behind those gospels that are actually putting that information out to people. So, you know, but I do think the key really is education. That's what it comes down to, is educating yourself on the tyranny of the world. There are, you know, there's different views on education. I just happened, I wrote them down a while back and just wanted to briefly touch on them. There's a biblical view and a pagan view. And both of these views really define how the public today looks at tyranny, you know. The biblical view, what it basically says here is that the state is divinely ordained, okay. State authority is limited, which always leads to patriotism. And when you're, you know, when people are patriotic, that will result in a republic type of government, which we are supposed to be under.
Right.
And this type of view is based on creation and looking at things on a creation biblical viewpoint. The pagan viewpoint says that the state is divine. See, there's a huge difference there. The biblical view says the state is divinely ordained, which means it has a higher power overseeing the state.
Absolutely.
Where the pagan view says the state itself is divine. So when you look at it from a paganistic view, you're looking at the state as being your God or authority,
right,
as opposed to God being the authority over the state. You understand where I'm coming from?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the pagan view also says that the state authority is unlimited, okay, which basically means that if you look at the state as being God, then there's no limit to what the state can do. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing a lot today in our country. I mean, these bankers, for instance, they're just, you know, they've got an open checkbook and can do whatever they want to do without facing any consequences, you know, basically because people see them as having unlimited authority. You know, the state gives them that authority, which is not true. And that always leads to state worship, which we're seeing today, and ultimately always results in tyranny. So those two different viewpoints, I think, are what we're faced with today, a biblical viewpoint of what the state's all about and a paganistic viewpoint. And, you know, again, I think it all goes back to education. People really need to educate themselves today about this tyranny that we're facing. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, people. Please call in tonight. We'd love to hear from you a bit. Brad, I want to turn it over to you now that I threw that that point out there and just get your input on what you think about the paganistic view and the biblical view.
Yeah, I think
of,
it's
state.
Yeah, very, very well stated. It's a subtle difference there, what it means for the state to have been divinely ordained, or where the state is in and of itself divine. Very subtle difference there, but extremely significant, very, very important that that we understand what is that difference. If we believe that the state in and of itself is divine, then an extension of that is where we used to see, you know, in Europe a couple hundred years ago, the divine right of kings, where a monarch, just by the position that he held, had a carte blanche to do whatever he wanted.
Right, right.
And again, because of that, because of that philosophy and that view that they held, we saw that those who left, for example, England and came here as the settlers that inhabited this continent, we saw eventually the American Revolution because they were getting away from that mindset. And our Constitution was written under the natural law, mm-hmm. that the government has been instituted by God, that God is, of course, higher, has more authority than the government. The government should answer to God, and that us as citizens, for being sons and daughters of our Creator, we inherently have rights. It's not that the government gives us those rights. For being human beings, we already have those rights. It's the government that merely safeguards those rights that we possess. They don't give them to us. Thereby, they cannot take them away except by the due process of law. And it's very important that we understand that. On education, I agree that, unfortunately, degrees, whether it be, you know, a bachelor, a master's, a doctorate, is not necessarily synonymous with actual knowledge of truth that we hold. Unfortunately, in our academic institutions, there's a lot of disinformation that is taught. What you hear in school or what you hear in college from your history professor or from your economics professor, what you hear when you're sitting on the table in your doctor's office may not necessarily be the truth. And that's unfortunate. That's extremely unfortunate because we expect professors, we expect doctors to be authorities and to be specialists and the experts in their fields to be able to help us. But it does not always happen like that. And that's why it is paramount that every individual take the time to educate themselves. The first thing you can do is educate yourself and then educate others and then take action. If you do not do that, then you are left to trust other people. And sure. Unfortunately, you can't do that.
Right. Well, absolutely. It's, you know, the Bible even talks about that, and it makes it very clear. It says, let no man teach you. And, I think the biblical viewpoint there, not so much as not learning from others,
uh-huh.
but it's just, basically saying that when you become a disciple of somebody, just be aware of what it is that they're teaching you.
Right.
And don't ever hesitate to question that authority.
Mm-hmm.
I know from being a minister in the church for a long time that one of the biggest problems I faced working in ministry, for example, was that whenever there was a authority figure, over me,
mm-hmm.
I respected that person, but I was always challenged with the fact that when I had questions that didn't line up,
mm-hmm.
with everything I was being taught, that a lot of times I was outcast or made to feel bad that I was actually raising these questions.
Sure, absolutely.
I think that happens to a lot of us in society today. When we're in school and we're being taught a subject or something like that, if you a lot of times go against the grain or try to question authority in some form, that actually it's marked against you
right.
as being something wrong or bad. And I certainly don't want my children to be raised in that fashion or manner.
That kind of environment.
And but I think unfortunately that's the environment that most of us are brought up in.
Right.
And for some of us, we're able to break outside that matrix.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the reasons when we came up with this radio show, people, we named it the Matrix Radio Live Show, because so many of us are raised and brought up in this system that has pulled the wool over our eyes, so mm-hmm. to speak. And this is what we're trying to do, is trying to help people break out of that system and set themselves free. We're trying to do that with information. We're trying to give you guys the information that we have, as small as it might be, but we're just trying to help people out there to look a little deeper and look beyond what they've been taught and what they've been told, because it's not always the truth. So we're trying to bring truth to light here, and we're trying to just give people a different perspective and viewpoint on what they've seen out there. So
yeah, I just want to add really quickly, Martin, that I do wholeheartedly endorse the notion of continuing one's education. You know, I don't mean to say that people should not seek an academic education from from academic institutions. I do believe that finishing school is important. I do believe that pursuing a continued education is extremely important. I plan to do that, in the coming years. I want to pursue a master's. I want to continue to educate myself. But in doing so, you always have to understand that just because you're told something from the pulpit, just because you're told something from the front of the classroom or from your doctor, it does not necessarily mean that it's true. By educating yourself, you're going to be able to further understand where the truth actually lies.
Yeah,
you're not going to have to rely on other people.
That's very important. And I agree with you. You know, continuing your education is very important. And we want to get into a lot of economic news tonight. We're going to do that here shortly. First of all, we're just trying to make a point here and clarify, you know, to everybody so you can understand where we're coming from as to, education and the two sides of education. There are two sides of it, you know, that we're trying to point out here. The side of, being challenging, you know, you should always want to challenge and question authority. And the other side of education is, you know, just to improve yourself and put yourself in a position of learning and knowing more. So some of you may have heard of Robert Kiyosaki out there. I don't know if you've heard of Robert Kiyosaki, Brad. Robert Kiyosaki is he's a wealthy investor from the state of Hawaii, has written many books. One of his most famous books is called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And Robert also wrote a book that I read not too long ago, and the book is titled, If You Want Your Children to Be Wealthy and Happy, Don't Send Them to School. And it's funny that he wrote this book because Robert himself is a very highly educated person and holds many degrees. And his father actually was the dean of the school system in Hawaii. He was basically the head of all the school systems there in Hawaii for many years and held that position. But what he figured out, what Robert figured out was that, even though his father had all this education and all these degrees, there's a lot of things he still didn't know when it came down to common sense and just basically understanding the truth about things and where people came from. And the point that he makes in his book, which I find very interesting, is that he goes into deep detail about our education system today and how our education system is really just set up. It's not set up in a fashion to educate people to where they actually learn. It's set up as a system of memorization where people are just taught to memorize things that they're ultimately going to forget anyway, and they're just doing this to step through the system to get, you know, the grades and marks to get these pieces of paper by our so-called professionals that are going to be the ones to ordain us into whatever type of field that we're going into. So I've met many, many millionaires and very well-to-do people, actually in my lifetime, that have no education at all.
Right.
You know, other than maybe a high school education or something like that. Some of them I know don't even, you know, maybe had a 7th or 8th grade education. Mm-hmm. So we don't necessarily have to have an outstanding degree in order to be successful in life. Although, I don't think it hurts to be well-educated because then you've always got that to fall back on. But I think in some cases it can actually hinder certain people, you know, because not everybody learns the same way. So, in any case, I guess the point we're trying to make here is that, yes, it's very important to be educated on an academic level, but at the same time, I think it's just as, if not more, important to be educated on a social and streetwise level.
Right,
more practical level as well. So those are both sides of the education coin, and I think it's important to look at both of them and you know, don't negate one or the other, and just kind of balance them out in your life. So, and that's the biggest problem we're facing today is that I think too many people are weighing on the side of the scale of academic education and not enough on the, you know, the other side of it. So we're going to get into a few news stories tonight as well, people. I'm glad Brad is here with me tonight because I had a couple things out here that are on my mind that I wanted to throw at him here. You know, Brad being an Army captain, I'm trying to hold off on the some of the other economic news until Justin gets here. Justin Brady will be joining us here in the studio shortly. So we're just going to try to hold off on some of this stuff as long as we can until he gets in the studio with us tonight. But a couple of things here that were on my mind this week. Brad, I printed out, let me see how many I have here. Let's see, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories that I printed out probably in like the last 3 days that are all questioning the military. Well, basically, let me read this one here from the Raw story. It says, the military may have to quell domestic violence from an economic collapse. That's the headline from the Raw story. Here's one from Newsmax.com. U.S. military preparing for domestic disturbances. Here's one from the Phoenix Business Journal. Arizona police say they are prepared as the War College warns the military must prep for unrest. The IMF, which is the International Monetary Fund, warns of economic riots. Here's another one. Unrest caused by bad economics or bad economy may require military action. Here's another one from the Washington Post. The Pentagon to detail troops to bolster domestic security. So, I mean, this is, you know, this is on the forefront of every major news wire and news channel out there, Brad, that, you know, the military is basically on edge of being prepped to, you know, quell any type of uprising by the people or any type of dissent that's going to happen. And, you know, I don't know how fast this is going to happen or, you know, where this economic road is going to lead us to take us. But, you know, I've been saying and predicting for a long time that I think there's going to be some sort of civil uprising once things get bad enough. I don't think they're at the point yet, excuse me, where that's going to happen. But, you know, I certainly see it on the horizon. And, you know, the thing I've always noticed is that the more of these news stories that you tend to see the same type of stories about, the more and more that happens, the closer and closer this type of thing gets.
Absolutely,
so,
right.
I just wanted to get your viewpoint on it, and, you know, you being a ranking official in the Army, just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about, you know, where you see the Army heading. And if you also, you know, I don't know if you can tell us or not. I know, you know, you're limited on certain things you can talk about, but have you heard of any types of orders being given, you know, in this fashion, you know, to the military? So
the information that I have, that I've heard, is probably very, very similar in scope and degree to what has also been put out in the news.
Okay.
Yes, there has been talk about it. By virtue of the fact that it has come out in so many different news articles,
mm-hmm.
I think that this is a preparatory tactic, which means that it's being placed out there. It's being justified before it even happens,
right.
So that when it does happen, it does not come as such the constitutional shock that it should be.
Right.
So they're trying to soften up the public so that it won't be as shocking when it actually does happen. I do believe that it will happen, which is unfortunate. I do believe that is a constitutional misuse of the military. I believe that military forces, you know, should not be used domestically. That's not what they're designed for. Military forces are not police forces, and you can't consider
right.
The two. So it's tricky times. It's going to be tricky times for the individuals involved. I will assure the public, those that are listening right now, that there are many individuals in the Army that are very wary about things like this happening.
Right.
Because
okay.
they see
that was going to be my next question
yes.
to you, Brad. You know, how, you know, what are the troops saying? What are the people that you work with, you know, saying? What are they commenting on about this type of thing? I mean, you know, obviously we know where you're coming from,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you're the type of people that we need in our military, undoubtedly. But I just want to get a you know, an overall viewpoint of, you know, what's the overall consensus of most of the people in the military today. Are they still looking at it negatively, the way you say that they should be, or are they jumping on the bandwagon and you know, wanting to ride this thing out in the glory, so to speak?
Yeah, it's going to be a mixed bag within the armed forces, just like within the American public. But there are people out there who are educated individuals who understand the Constitution, and not only that, but also understanding conceptually why we have these limitations placed on the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
Where I teach at the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, we have students that come from all over the Western Hemisphere, and in many of these countries, especially in Central and South America, they are just now getting to the point where they are learning the importance of having a body of armed forces that are subordinate to civilian control.
Right,
in many
okay.
of those countries, you've either had military coups or some type of military
oh, yeah.
dictatorship. And so now they're understanding why you have to have that limitation.
Sure.
Well,
that's good. You're rubbing off on them, apparently, which is good. That's
which
what
is,
we need.
Right, which is good. And it just makes it more successful for those individual nations. But also, as you have a Republican form of government that exists in countries, you're going to have a more peaceful and stable region and world, of course. But the problem is you cannot have, when you blur the lines, you're moving away from the Republican form of government that was instituted in this nation, where the rule is held in the hands of the people, where even the terminology that we're using is changing these days. You know, it used to be public service or public servant.
Right,
now
right,
we refer to
sure.
individuals as officials,
as
authority.
Right, exactly.
The way the military should be viewed, the same with police, is that they are there to serve the public, but again,
right.
in different fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot, you know, that a lot of this authority and power is being misused today, you know, especially by you know, these people, these global elite that are the ones, you know,
mm-hmm.
pretty much running most of the economies of the world today, you know. These guys don't view things the same way you and I do.
Right.
You know, and you a while back you were making the statement about our Constitution and having these God-given rights that, mm-hmm. You know, every human being should be allowed to live with, and those have, you know, drastically been eroded from our society today.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of these other countries that you're speaking of don't even know what they are, you know, to begin with, because they've been under such oppression for so long by, you know, by the leaders that, these military leaders and
right.
Different governments that just keep the people oppressed all the time. So, yeah, I think that people just really don't understand, you know, what they're losing today and what, you know, what the military is really put in place for.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just sad that we're going down this road. I'm really glad to see, though, that, you know, that there's people like you that are trying to make a difference and, you know, rubbing off in the right way
mm-hmm.
on others and trying to lead them down the right road of understanding. So, but it just, you know, it just, I'm sorry, Brad, it just really, you know, makes me wonder what's going on here when you see all these stories. Like you said, you know, I do believe they are softening the people up.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting, this is, you know, this happens all the time. I mean, anytime you want to change the belief or the way that people look at things, it's always best to soften them up, get them ready for things ahead of time. You know, like for instance, all these different video games that we play all the time. You know, a lot of people don't know and understand that these video games were actually first designed by the military as a way to dehumanize soldiers that were going into war. I mean, it's a lot easier for a soldier to go into war in a battle and kill somebody when they don't look at the other side or the other person as a human.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of these stories we're looking at here are doing the same type of work. I mean, when you start telling the general public that, hey, every time they pick up the newspaper or they turn on the TV and watch a story, that get ready, you know, because the military is going to be coming down your street anytime soon, just get ready for it. You know, it might not happen right away, but we just want you to know that it's probably going to happen. When that starts happening, it softens the people up so that when it really does happen, it's not such a constitutional shock, as you put it,
right,
to the people, the way that it should be. And I agree, it should be. I mean,
yes.
People should just be livid and out of their minds at this type of things going on. But, you know, where are most of the people today? I mean, you know, they're just sitting in their easy chairs and letting
right.
it happen.
Yeah, the
it's
sheeple.
It's unfortunate.
You know, either they're apathetic or, unfortunately, they are not informed enough to understand when their constitutional rights are actually being trampled upon. I do want to add that when it comes to conditioning soldiers, yes, that is something that does happen. And if you look at it one way, you have soldiers that are being deployed to fight right now in Afghanistan or Iraq. The same thing happened in the previous Iraq war, and also, of course, in Vietnam, where you're conditioned to take the fight to the enemy and be very aggressive in doing so.
Yeah.
Whether that's right or wrong, you know, whatever, that's a different argument for a different day.
Sure.
However, if you allow yourself to get carried away to where you become just a bloodthirsty maniac, then obviously, yes, you're out of control. And that's why we have the leadership in place in the Army, is to make sure that does not happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one thing if you are in Iraq, you're in Afghanistan, where you're interfacing with the Iraqi or the Afghan public, which looks different than you, has a different culture, they speak a different language. It's easier to dehumanize that individual. I am in no way advocating that. I'm not saying that that's right, but it happens. The scary thing is, if United States troops are deployed within the United States domestically, now they're interfacing with other Americans who share your same culture.
Yeah.
You're going to have soldiers who are deployed within their home state where they're originally from, interacting with their same people who speak their same language. Is that same dehumanization going to occur? Because if it does, now you're forcing soldiers to dehumanize their own citizens.
Oh, sure,
and
yeah.
You purposefully do not teach soldiers the same things that you do with police officers that are taught very extensively in constitutional rights and in law and in dealing with the public, because the default is always that, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty. When
that's
police,
what it's supposed to be.
Right, that's what it's supposed to be, exactly. When the police are on any type of operation, the default is that you take the person in alive. If you can do that without shooting, then you absolutely do that.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can take down the target without a shot having to be fired. You do everything possible to keep even the suspect's life, you know, to give them all their rights and their liberties to us, not put their life in jeopardy unless absolutely possible.
Right.
The military is exactly the opposite. That if someone is a combatant, you are legally and ethically and morally allowed to take the fight to that enemy and to neutralize them in any way possible, even if it be lethally, unless there are extenuating or mitigating circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But just by virtue of them being a uniformed combatant, you are allowed to legally destroy them.
Yeah.
So that's a completely different mindset. And it is not directly translational to working within United States boundaries.
Okay.
It's dangerous to soldiers,
and
it's of course dangerous to the American citizen.
Right. Sure. Do you think that has anything to do with you know, the fact that the U.S. Government is is strongly recruiting military personnel from foreign countries these days, as far as, you know, we know that there's big recruiting stations in other countries like the Philippines, and the, you know, the Southern Hemisphere, where they're actually bringing in, you know, people. I know when I was in the military, I spent extensively a lot of time in the Philippines, and there were a lot of people recruited from the Philippines that were in the U.S. Navy that I was in with, and, you know, it just makes me wonder that if they're not doing this type of thing so that you are faced with that scenario you're talking about where it's a lot easier for somebody of a different race or a different culture or different, you know, language, it's a lot easier to look at that person and you know, be, have them, you know, dehumanized, so to speak. That, you know, it makes me wonder if that's not the objective here by doing so. I know the military has had a big problem lately with recruiting, you know, personnel locally here from the United States, but I also think a lot of that stems into all the different things that the government has the military doing today,
right.
You know, by having them in all these other countries,
right?
Constantly and just deploying troops over there.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes me wonder, and I wanted to ask you what you thought about that. If you think that's one of the reasons they may be doing this type of thing today with the recruiting of, you know, foreigners into
right.
our military in order to build up the troops so that if something does happen, it makes it easier for these people to, you know, go on the streets of America and patrol American cities if they're not from our
right.
our country, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, that, yes, very, very well stated point. And absolutely, the other reasons are that all the armed forces across the board are struggling numbers-wise right now. They're struggling
mm-hmm.
with retaining the people that are currently employed in the armed forces, and they're also having trouble meeting the recruitment goals.
Yeah, right.
So
I know it's been a big problem for quite a while.
Yeah, it has. And the two branches that suffer the most are typically the Army and the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, again, times fluctuate. But yeah, very, very hard. So the armed forces are seeking numbers, and it is complicated because, fortunately, for example, your leadership, you know, your officers do have to be United States citizens because they have to have a certain level of security clearance.
Sure.
That is can only be given if you are a citizen. However, many of them are naturalized citizens, but citizens. But again, your entire soldier and sergeant, your non-commissioned officer base. Unless they are also at the point where they're seeking that higher security clearance, which many of them do, depending
yeah.
on the jobs that they hold, they don't necessarily have to be citizens, though, until they get
okay.
to that point or they're in a specific job or position where they need that type of security clearance.
You know, what I find amazing, Brad, is that we can have somebody in the White House in a position of being a president or a, you know, like, for instance, Hillary Clinton, you know, they were just recently looking at, Barack Obama was just recently looking at her as becoming the Secretary of State. But what's amazing is that with the criminal records that these people have, even during the time that Bill Clinton was the President of the United States, there were certain areas that were restricted to him and Hillary due to their criminal records, that they could not have certain clearance into certain areas. Now, you know, I find that amazing that, you know, you can have somebody as the President of the United States or the Secretary of State in these positions where they have to have, you know, clearance to serve these top secret areas that because of their criminal records they're not allowed to have. So it just, you
yeah.
know, I
yeah.
find it amazing that if it can happen on that level, I guess it can happen on any level.
Well, an analogy for that I would be much more familiar with just at my level is a lot of times when you have commanders of battalions, of brigades, once they get to that level, they hold that rank.
Yeah.
They're going to hold a specific level of security clearance because if they're ineligible for that, they won't make that rank. They will not be placed in that command because once they're in that command, they have to be privy to the intelligence that is out there to be able to conduct their operations on the
sure,
ground.
Yeah.
A commander should not be the intelligence expert because he's going to have one of his staffers who is the S2, who is the intelligence officer. He's going to be the expert and, of course, give that information to the commander. Mm-hmm. And then the commander, of course, with his experience and now with his intel and all the other staffers that are also giving him their piece of the pie,
right.
He'll make the decisions and execute the operation. If he did not have the security clearance commensurate to be able to receive that information, he would be making decisions in the dark. So if you just take it up several levels to talk about the White House or whatever,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
it can cause problems.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I just find that amazing that, people can be put in these types of positions and allowed to be in certain positions of authority like that. And again, the public, in most cases, doesn't even know that this type of thing is going on.
Right, oblivious to it. And another thing which is just as scary is that sometimes I think that people, they may not have all the information, they may not have all the pieces of the puzzle put together, but something jars with their common sense. They know that something is not right.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, you need to act on that. You need to step up. You need to speak out on that. If you feel that, that things are happening, whether it's at the local, the state, or the federal level, there's something happening that's not right, then, you have to speak out again.
Yeah.
Don't just allow your rights to be trampled on. Or the rights of other people. When you see other rights of other individuals that are being trampled on, don't allow that to happen because one day it's going to be your rights that are being trampled on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the way the spider web works, you know.
Yeah.
It always comes, whatever goes around comes around mm-hmm. eventually. And, unfortunately, most of the people, I think, in this country, they take that viewpoint that unless it happens to me, I'm just not going to involve myself with the seriousness of the issue.
Yeah.
So,
one thing I did want to say, Martin, and this goes for soldiers and also police, any type of public servant of that nature, but Americans should have the right not to fear police officers and not to fear military officers or soldiers because there should be someone who has their best interest at hand.
Yeah,
anytime you come in contact with a police officer, he should always be very respectful to you, very courteous to you, even if he's pulled you over for a ticket. You know, he's writing you a speeding ticket. He's not, hauling you in for some felony or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're just grossly in error or something, they should always be extremely respectful because they should always be respecting your rights that you hold as an American citizen at all times.
Yeah.
And when they're not, that they are not serving you, and you are actually the client. They're there to serve you as public service. The military, while the roles are different, that same type of philosophy is still very much present and should be. But, again, it's going to get very tricky if we deploy American forces inside the United States. Soldiers are taught, it happens every time that soldiers are deployed, and this is a good thing, soldiers are taught that anytime they're given an order which they believe to be illegal or unethical or unconstitutional, the first recourse is that they're supposed to ask for clarification, approach their leader to make sure that they understood the order right.
Right, okay.
If it's very clear cut that order is just illegal,
right.
Then the soldier has the right to ask that the order be revoked, be rescinded. And if the order is given again, then he is bound, morally and legally, he is bound to disobey that order and then to report it to an even higher level within the chain of command.
Right.
So there is that mechanism in place, whether it's illegal or not. Right. But I do want people to understand out there that soldiers are taught from the lowest ranks that they are, whether it be in Iraq or Afghanistan, an order that is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Or here or wherever, that if they are given an order which they know to be illegal, they are under no obligation to follow that just because it's been given by someone who happens to outrank them.
Yeah, right. Well, I think, a big part of the problem today, especially on the side of the police, I think a lot of our police officers today are not taught and trained properly as to what the law really is, because
and that may be intentional, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I guarantee you, a lot of it comes down to probably stupidity, but because maybe their teachers didn't know as well. But I guarantee you, if I went up to 10 police officers and I asked them, "Hey, do I legally have to have a driver's license to drive my car up and down the streets of Mooresville, North Carolina here?" I'll bet you probably all 10 of them would say, yes, you legally have to have a driver's license. When you really find out the truth about the law, you don't have to have a driver's license to drive a car, an automobile on the street.
One quick story that I just remembered this. About a year ago, maybe not quite a year ago, I was in downtown Columbus, Georgia, and I was visiting a friend, and I had one of my dogs with me who is I have two dogs. One's a German Shepherd and one's a Pit Bull.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both extremely well-behaved. I view dogs the way that a lot of people view guns, is that if you own a gun, it's your responsibility to be a responsible gun owner. If
sure.
you own a dog that's a powerful breed dog, then that responsibility is on you to handle that dog.
Absolutely.
Both of my dogs are very obedient. They're very well-trained. I knew that there was a leash law that existed in Columbus, Georgia. But I also knew that, they weren't outlawed. Pit bulls are outlawed in some cities. Columbus, Georgia is not one of those.
Okay.
I had my dog on downtown. I was walking with him. He was on a leash. I was in compliance with every single ordinance from the city. And I was approached by two police officers. My dog at that time was only 6 months old, extremely well-behaved, still a puppy. People had been petting him all along as I'd been walking with him. But they approached me very aggressively, And when I challenged them, when I said, am I or am I not breaking the law, and they refused to answer that question, and because they viewed me as someone who was challenging their authority, one of them actually told me, if I want, I can tell you to take your dog and go home. And when I challenged him on that, no, actually, you can't. No, as a police officer,
right.
you do not have the authority to kick me off the street when I was stone cold sober.
Right.
And I was holding my dog on a leash.
Where's the law? You have to have a law backing up that authority. You made an interesting comment there on a word called ordinances. A lot of people misunderstand. They think that ordinances are actually the law, and they're really not. And people just misconstrue the law all the time, and unfortunately. Our country, our constitutional republic, was written to be the letter of the law, but now people don't view it as the law any longer.
Right.
They have twisted everything all around, and I think that's a little bit of what you ran into there in your situation, because that happens all the time.
Absolutely, and that story actually has a happy ending in that I stood my ground firmly. And for 10 or 15 minutes, people were walking by and they were catching the conversation that happened. But because I knew law, and I knew I was in accordance with the law, and I wasn't going to allow these police officers to bully me around, I was very respectful and very professional, but at the same time very firm because I knew I was right. One of them actually asked me when one of them, who was more antagonistic than the other, really started crossing the line, I actually asked him for the desk number of his superior and his badge number, and I told him that in the morning during business hours, I was going to call his direct supervisor.
Okay.
And he told me to call 911. That was his answer to me, to call 911. And that's when his partner realized that the other one was getting a little out of line.
Yeah, he had a problem there.
Yeah, exactly, because that's just wrong. And so that guy actually called his superior, his sergeant, on the radio, who showed up. He asked if I wanted to speak to the sergeant. I told him that yes, I did.
Yeah.
And two or three minutes later, the sergeant showed up, pulled me aside, not there on the street in front of all the people, but around the corner, was very respectful. Even his body language was completely different. And in the end, he thanked me for being a responsible dog owner, a responsible citizen, and thanked me for standing up to the officers. And in the end, he shook my hand. He told me that I was right. He told me that that it was my duty as a citizen to understand the laws and thank me for it. And we parted on good terms.
That's good. Yeah. What's interesting was a while back I took my concealed carry gun permit class,
mm-hmm.
and the gentleman that was teaching the class is a former police officer, here from Mooresville, and he still has a lot of contact and still works very closely with a lot of the local sheriffs and police departments. And he was an older guy, probably in his 70s or so, and the comment that he made to us, to our class, was that he said, unfortunately, we have a lot of police officers out there that don't know the law, and that make a lot of us look bad.
Right.
And, I'm afraid that's the truth. He said, the comment that he made to us, which I found kind of funny, he said that, well, if you run into a police officer that has a little gray around the temple, you'll probably be a lot better off than if you find one of the younger kids on the street.
Right.
So he was just, commenting on the fact that the police officers also get a little wiser as they get older, too.
Well, interesting note of the two police officers in this situation with me. I found out afterwards as we were standing there waiting for the sergeant, just through the conversation that the two of them were having together, that the one, the more antagonistic of the two, had spent a lot of time in the Army.
Yeah.
I was right outside of a military base, Columbus, Georgia, right outside Fort Benning.
Sure.
But I put the pieces together and I realized that what had probably happened was, I don't know, I'm guessing, but he had probably retired from the Army, and he brings that mindset into his job as a police officer. Judging from his age, he'd probably only been a police officer for a few years, and it's completely different. And he was talking to an American citizen, myself, as if I were, a private and he were a sergeant, and that's not the way that a police officer should be talking to an American citizen.
Yeah.
I was a responsible dog owner. I would never take my dog on a street in public if he were dangerous. Just if as a gun owner, which I am, I also take that responsibility very seriously, the way that I'm going to operate my weapon.
I totally agree with you. That's how I feel about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're being responsible and you're doing what you're supposed to do, then there's no right that you, or no reason that you should feel, that you have to be bullied by these people, I think a lot of them understand that, but I think that a lot of the authority also goes to their head sometimes.
Yeah.
It just makes them feel a little bit more superior than other people, but I'm just hoping that when everything hits the fan down the road, that most of them come to their senses and,
mm-hmm.
and fall in line as to understanding where they're supposed to be and who they're supposed to be working for and what their duties really all about. So,
right, absolutely.
That's my biggest concern.
Don't ever accept tyranny at any level, whether it be, at the government, at the state level, or on the streets of Columbus, Georgia, where I was when that took place, even at the local level. But
I totally agree.
Always stand up. But if you're going to do that, that's why it's so important to educate yourself, because if you're going to put yourself in a situation, you don't want to look bad. You want to make sure that you're right.
Yeah. Well, obviously, he could tell you knew what you were talking about.
Right.
And, I think that's probably 90% of the battle right there.
Absolutely.
If they understand and know that you know the law, that that gives you a solid footing on the situation. And a lot of times they'll back down if they, because obviously he didn't
right.
know the law in that situation. And you did.
Mm-hmm.
And you came out on top. So that just goes to show you that, when you're right, you're right. And, you can always stand on the truth and come out victoriously in those types of situations. I agree. We'd like to know what you guys think out there. I know there's a lot of people listening out there tonight. Brad and I have been tossing around a lot of information here, but we want to hear from you. We want to hear if you're pissed off about what's going on. We want to hear if you just don't care about what's going on. We'd like to hear from some of the listeners out there. Don't be afraid to pick up the phone and call us tonight. We want to know what you think, what's been going on in your neck of the woods out there. No matter where you're from, what country you're from, we'd like to hear from you tonight and get your input and opinion on some of these things that we're talking about. I guess Justin won't be with us this evening. I know he had some things going on, and hopefully he'll be here with us next week. But we were going to also talk a little bit. We were one of the main things we were talking about earlier this week was this. We had seen a story on CNN that was talking about the mortgage crisis that our country has been facing, and how this has kind of started to, you know, spiral the rest of the economy out of control. Now, the mortgage crisis, granted, it's a large part of the problem. I don't think it's as large a part of the problem as the dollar spiraling out of control, because ultimately that's what's going to affect everything. If you have a little piece of the pie like the mortgage situation, I think that's a little easier to get under control than when you have something like the dollar that's going right down the toilet,
right,
which is going to affect every sector, no matter what you're looking at. This is, you know, the dollar going downhill is even going to affect people that don't have financial problems right now.
Mm-hmm.
People that don't have bad credit.
Yeah.
People that don't have any kind of financial issues to worry about at this time. But what's going to happen is, once the dollar bottoms out to a point where it's totally worthless, even people that have a good financial foothold today, right now, won't have that, you know, down the road. So I think that's one of our biggest problems. But we did want to talk about the mortgage problem that's happening now. In this CNN news story that, or actually I think it was 60 Minutes it was on, that we were watching earlier this week, it had talked about the different types of mortgages. Okay, there were the subprime mortgages. Okay, now I can give a lot of input into this because I was, you know, a mortgage broker for about 5 years, and actually I sold insurance and securities products and annuities, and I actually had a financial business that I was very heavily tied into for a long time. And what the story talked about was the second wave of mortgage defaults that will be hitting here shortly. Okay, now the other types of mortgages that were sold out there, there was a product called an option arm mortgage. And I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago. We touched on it a little bit, but these option arm mortgages, really what they are is it was a mortgage that allowed the person borrowing the money to have an option on their monthly payment.
Right.
It would give you four different options. That's why they call it the option arm. What it was, it's an ARM, which is an adjustable rate mortgage. So you take an adjustable rate mortgage and you couple that together with payment options every month that you could pick and choose from, and that's how an option ARM works. But that's just the tip of the iceberg of how these loans
right.
work. Being an ARM, they are going to reset themselves at some point where you have to either have your interest rate increase, or the principal amount of money that you owe has to increase. Something has to increase.
Right. You're not going to get away with not paying.
Yeah, because you can't get away forever with not paying on a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah.
At some point, that mortgage has to be paid off. Now, what happens with these option arms is that every month when you get your statement in the mail, you open that statement and you look at it, and what it would say, Brad, is it would say, you have the option to, A, pay principal and interest on a 30-year loan or a 30-year amortization, okay? Option B, you can pay principal and interest on a 15-year loan or 15-year amortization, which would be really to your benefit because then you're paying the loan off even faster.
Yeah.
Or option C, you have the option to pay interest only, which means you're not paying anything on the principal. You're just paying strictly the interest on the loan. And that's it. Or option D, which was, they always give you four options on these mortgages. And option number four, or option D, would give you the option to pay lower than interest only, which actually was a negative interest rate. So let's say you had a 6% mortgage on the,
right.
Well, it was an ARM, so it would have been a lot lower than that. Let's
yeah.
say you had a 4% interest rate on that arm that you took out, but this was an option arm. So let's say it gave you the option to pay lower than interest only, which would have been minus 1%. Well, what happens is minus 1% to 4% interest, there's a 5% spread there. So what happens is every time you choose to pay that minus 1% on the loan, every month you're accruing 5% interest on the money you owe the bank.
Yeah.
So that's how these things would work. Now, at the end of so many years, whenever that arm, you know, came to be adjusted, and most of them were 5-year terms, at least the ones that I've sold were 5 years. At the end of 5 years, what would happen is that loan would reset. And when it reset, now you now owe the bank more money than you originally started owing them 5 years ago when you took the mortgage out. And also, you're now going to be paying more interest on the loan as well. So it was for most people that have these types of mortgages, it's a lose-lose situation because most people, when they're given those options, they always opt to pay the least amount of money
that
they can. I mean, that's just, you know, pretty much human nature, but I think for most of us, pay as little as we can. And also, a lot of these people didn't understand how these things worked, okay, which, you know, is the fault of the brokers. You know, when all the clients that I worked with and sold these types of mortgages to, I made darn sure they understood how they worked up front.
What they were getting.
And also, I wouldn't give it to a person. I wouldn't give that type of mortgage to a person if I didn't feel they were the right type of client to have that mortgage in the first place. I always felt that these types of mortgages were best suited for real estate professionals, people that were like flipping houses,
right,
or real estate developers that just needed a loan for maybe 6 months, a year, maybe 2 years, no longer than 3 years. They're going to flip that house over and sell it again. You know, that's where those mortgages could be very useful and come in handy. But the problem is that industry-wide out there, these mortgages were sold to anybody and everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry to say that most of the people don't understand how these things work and what's going to be happening to them down the road. Now, the story that we saw on 60 Minutes was showing, the predicted outcome of the next wave of foreclosures that will be happening on all these people.
Right.
And it predicted over 500 billion dollars of mortgages that are going to be, again, you know, just going right down the tube. So, and this will be happening, it said, about the end of 2009, first part of 2010, which is when a lot of these are going to be,
right,
resetting again. So we have not seen the worst of the economic mortgage situation. And then you tie that into, along with what's going on in the commercial sector of real estate and what's going to be happening there shortly. And, you know, it's just a time bomb, a ticking bomb that's waiting to go off. And unfortunately, it's going to be happening soon.
Yeah, it is. And a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, exactly right. It absolutely is. And, you know, there's just so much we could talk about here with this economic scenario that's playing out. And again, the people aren't privy to, you know, a lot of this information, or either that or they just don't care about it.
Right.
This other story that you had sent and talked to us about, also, Brad, the one about the Russian former KGB agent. Russian professor predicts the end of the United States. People are starting to listen to this guy now. You know, it's amazing how when, you know, people come up with these theories, and, you know, they always discount these type of people as, you know, as being fools or you know, tinfoil hat wearing
kooks,
you know. And then when things start to happen just the way they said they would, then, you know, people will sit up and start to take notice and listen to these people. But
I wish they had taken action earlier.
Absolutely. So this is where we're going to pick up next week. I think we're going to talk about this Russian professor that is predicting the end of the United States, and also get into some of the the information and theories behind, you know, what the U.S. Government has planned for the breakup of the United States, which is another deep rabbit hole that we can go down. So we'll talk about some of that next week. We're just about out of time. Just want to say good evening to everybody. Again, we hope you had a great New Year. We had a very, very pleasant New Year at the Siegel household this week. And, you know, I'm trying to keep happy thoughts and high hopes for 2009. Although I think, in reality, that 2009 is going to be even a more devastating year than 2008 was for a lot of us. So, you know, we're going to keep praying about these things and let God work His plan here. And we just hope that His grace falls on many of you out there because you're certainly going to need it. So we're going to sign off here, Matrix Radio Live, for January 2nd, 2009. Brad, do you have anything else to add or say to the people out there before we close for the evening?
No, I just, you know, basically just wish everyone the best of luck. But again, the three things we talked about, educate yourself, educate others, and take action. Always stand up against tyranny at whatever level.
Absolutely. I agree. Okay, well, good night, people, and hopefully we can get Brad back on the show again here real soon, even if we have to do it long distance. Hopefully that we can do that and have him sit in with us when he's back at his duty station. So good night, Brad, and good night to everybody out there, and we'll talk to you soon. And until next week. Keep your spirits high.
Man, I'm gonna do my thing. Crazy in the club, but I'm in that man. Trust me, homie, I'm not playing. I had a dance floor off the chain. I said, get up! I came to bring you that California love and the little New York hate. It's all of the above. I'm not playing, I'm saying I'm up the chain. You niggas better follow instructions. I said, get up!
I bow to our power. I start to I drop them off the showroom floor, not the used car lot. You buy a bottle, I buy the ball. I make any other week feel like Mardi Gras. When I get into it, I get into it. Everybody can't do it the way I do it. I mean